Gals, it's time to talk about the game of life, according to Flossie. Welcome to Sobriety Snippets for Women Over 40, where we elevate our mindset and exchange hangovers for higher consciousness, one powerful snippet at a time. I'm Becca Jacobson, and you have entered Snippet Land. Welcome aboard the Snippet Train. We've kept the home fires burning for you here in Snippet Land. Is that enough metaphor? Yeah, it's enough. It's enough for today. Gals, I'm so glad you're here. Welcome back to Snippet Land. For those of you who are regulars, if you're new here, I'm so glad you made it. If you're over 40, struggling with alcohol, this is where you belong. And today's a great day to hop on, because we are going to spend the next several Mondays looking at Florence Scovel Shinn's amazing little book from 1925 called The Game of Life and How to Play It. The Game of Life and How to Play It. I love that title. It's irresistible. And we're going to start today. I introduced this last week. And today we're going to look at the first chapter called The Game. But before we start, let's talk about a few things about studying older literature like this. But before we do that, let me just give you a quick orientation of why we're doing a book study. And I use the word study lightly. We're reading the book or not. You don't have to read the book to follow along. But we're looking at this book in terms of how we can apply it to our journey, not just to sobriety, but to a happier, healthier life, especially an emotional life. And because I spent 20 years as an English professor, this is a skill I bring with me, the ability to read, study, apply, and understand, and help others to understand literature, especially great works of literature from the past. So that's what brought us here today to the 1925 book, The Game of Life and How to Play It, written by Florence Scovel Shinn. Her friends called her Flossie, and we're taking the liberty of calling her Flossie too. So it's you, me, and Flossie. Let's get started. Another thing I want you to know about Flossie, remember now, she's writing in 1925, and this was a very progressive woman. She was not sitting around the house. She was out there doing things. She was an artist, an author, a speaker. She was a coach, essentially. They didn't use that word back in the day, but that's what she did. People would come and see her, and she would help coach them to happier, healthy lives based on the type of approach she talks about in this book. And Flossie was by no means a typical woman. That said, she lived in a particular era with a particular type of language. So in this book, you're going to hear a lot of pronouns that we don't really use generically anymore, and we're not going to try and fix them. We're just going to let them be, because it's part of the literature. It's part of the history. It's part of who she is. But let's just remember, no matter what pronoun Flossie uses, she's talking about humans. I mean, how could she be excluding women when she is one, right? The other thing we need to remember, in this era, Christianity was pretty across the board. It still is in the West. Maybe not as much. I don't know. I'm not going to try and analyze that question. But Flossie bases a lot of what she says on the Christian Bible. And I personally have no problem with that. I'm also personally not a Christian, or I don't call myself a Christian, for the simple fact that I don't attend any Christian church. I'm not a member of any denomination or congregation, and so I would hesitate to call myself a Christian. However, I am fascinated by scripture, and in my study of great works of literature, included in those studies have been the great scriptures of the world, including the Bhagavad Gita, which is the Hindu Holy Bible, and of course the Christian Bible and others. And so, I'm getting there, I promise. That makes me open to hearing what the Christian Bible has to say through Flossie's interpretation. So that's what we're getting here. She uses the Bible, she uses the pronouns, and she's trying to help us understand the game of life and be able to play it better. So let's have a look at this. Chapter 1, The Game. She opens by saying this, and I quote, "Most people consider life a battle, but it is not a battle. It is a game. It is a game, however, which cannot be played successfully without the knowledge of spiritual law. And the Old and the New Testaments give the rules of the game with wonderful clearness. Jesus Christ taught that it was a great game of giving and receiving. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. This means that whatever man sends out in word or deed will return to him. What he gives, he will receive. This is an important opening to this book, not because she's focused on the teachings of Jesus Christ in particular, or even the Old and New Testaments, but because the game of life, according to Flossie, as we're going to find out over the next several Mondays, is a game of thought. It's how we think. It's the pictures in our mind. It's the emotions and thoughts that we allow into our consciousness day by day by day, what builds our lives. And so she starts by saying, look, whatever you sow, you will reap. And she backs that up as a teaching from Jesus Christ. A little farther on, she quotes Proverbs and says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Now, heart, keep thy heart with all diligence. What does that mean? Flossie inserts the word imagination in place of heart. So keep thy imagination with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. That's Proverbs 4:23, chapter 4, verse 23. Here's how she explains that quote. This means that what man images, sooner or later externalizes in his affairs. That's huge. That sentence right there is huge. That's what this is all about. And actually, gals, it's what we talk about a lot here in Snippetland. I'm always reminding you that what you're thinking will not only affect your life, but will actually become your life. And if you're thinking about yourself in negative ways, if you're beating up on yourself, if you're walking around in regret, if you're walking around with shame, with fear, with frustration, with anger, you're going to have a life that reflects those thoughts and feelings. And this is what she says. Let me give it to you again. This means that what man images, and by images, right? She's saying in your mind, what you're seeing in your mind or thinking in your mind, what man images sooner or later externalizes in his affairs. It's a new thought argument. Even though it's 100 years ago, it's still called New Thought. And there's many other authors who agree with her on that. And we're going to be hearing more about that, a lot more about that as we continue. She gives a lot of examples in this book. It's one of the things I love about it. Remember, Flossie was teaching actively. People would come to her home and sit down and do a session with her, what she called a treatment, and she would help them. And so she gives us tons of stories of people that she has helped. Here's one. I know of a man who feared a certain disease. It was a very rare disease and difficult to get, but he pictured it continually and read about it until it manifested in his body, and he died, a victim of distorted imagination. Wow. Okay, we better stop and have a look at this. If you've been around Snippetland a long time, you may recall me talking about my mother. My mother died from breast cancer. And she spent the 15, maybe 20 years previous to her death talking nonstop about cancer. I don't know why. I don't know where it came from, but she developed this intense fear of cancer, maybe because it was always in the news or whatever. She died in 2003. And in the 15 or 20 years prior to that, you couldn't visit with my mom for one afternoon without hearing her talk about cancer. Or she would say, oh, you better not eat that. It causes cancer. You better be careful. You'll get cancer. It was constantly cancer, cancer, cancer. It was like inevitable that she was going to get it. And I've said that all along. Many people disagree with me, but that's part of my belief system. I saw it happen in her life. And here's Flossie saying the same thing about this man. He feared a certain disease, became obsessed with it, read about it, constantly talked about it, thought about it all the time, pictured it continually. And sure enough, he got that disease. Gals, this is true. This is true. This can happen to you. What we visualize, what we focus on, will show up in our lives. But the good news is, you can turn this on its head. What if you, instead of visualizing a rare disease, you were visualizing health? I mean, that's the beauty of it. That's why we always go down this path here in Snippetland, because you can change your life by changing the way you think about yourself. I love to say, change your thinking, change your drinking, because it is so powerful. It isn't the only thing we need to do. I do say that as well. We do need to heal our emotional wounds. We do need to deal with our past. We do need to learn forgiveness. There's a lot more to it, but we can start with a deep understanding of how our thoughts and the things we're imagining will affect our lives. Flossie continues and says, so we see to play successfully the game of life, We must train the imaging faculty. A person with an imaging faculty trained to image only good brings into his life every righteous desire of the heart. Health, wealth, love, friends, perfect self-expression, his highest ideals. The imagination has been called the scissors of the mind, and it is ever cutting, cutting, day by day, the pictures man sees there, and sooner or later he meets his own creations in his outer world. To train the imagination successfully, man must understand the workings of his mind. The Greeks said, "Know thyself." Then she goes on to explain the workings of the mind, but let's look more carefully at what she said there. The scissors of the mind. The mind is cutting day by day, cutting out what it doesn't want, putting in what it does want, but usually in the opposite direction. Pay attention to what you're thinking day by day by day, and you'll see why a lot of the things that are showing up in your life are showing up. And then add to those images, as she calls them, imaging, emotion. And boy, oh boy, it's even more powerful. When we imagine things and we get emotionally involved in what we're imagining, it's almost impossible to stop it from showing up. My mom's fear of cancer wasn't just words, she was afraid. So the fear, the emotion of fear was there. Day after week, after month, after year, it took a couple of decades, but it happened. Flossie teaches us there are three departments of the mind: the subconscious, conscious, and superconscious. The subconscious is power without direction. It's like steam or electricity, and it does what it is directed to do. It has no power of induction. This is important to know. The subconscious can do anything for us, but it does not make decisions. It does not decide what's right or wrong. It does not even come up with a plan. It does not think to itself, oh, this would be good for her, or that would be good, or let's do this. It just does what it's directed to do, and it's very powerful. But guess what's directing it? That's right, the conscious mind. And so we walk around all day in fear or in anger, and the subconscious hears, okay, we need to be fearful. We need things to be afraid of. We need things to be angry about. Let's make sure we have more of that, because that's what's been placed. That's the order. It's like placing an order on Amazon or placing an order with a waiter. They don't say to you, I don't think you should order that. That doesn't seem like the right thing for you to eat. No, they go to the kitchen and they get it and they bring it back, whether you should be eating it or not. Same with Amazon. You don't get a pop-up that says, are you sure you want to buy that? You know, you don't really have room in your house. And not only that, it's out of your budget. I mean, do you want to think this through? No, they go, you know, one-click checkout and you're done, babe, right? Your subconscious is the same. It doesn't ask whether you meant it or not. It doesn't take a joke. It doesn't analyze. It just does what you tell it to do. And here we are, directing it with fear, with frustration, with self-judgment, self-condemnation. Here's what Flossie says. Whatever man feels deeply or images clearly is impressed upon the subconscious mind and carried out in minutest detail. Which wraps it up right there. Whatever you feel deeply and see clearly in your mind is impressed upon the subconscious and carried out in minutest detail. And remember, it doesn't ask you, are you sure that's what you want? It just gives it to you. So if we're constantly thinking, in fact, let's use me as another example. I've told you this before. My mom's was cancer. Mine was alcohol. All I ever thought over and over for 30 years was, I can't stop drinking. Oh my God, I can't stop drinking. Oh, I just can't stop drinking. That message was deeply impressed on my subconscious, and my subconscious made damn sure that I couldn't stop drinking, because it heard that as an order for me. It heard that as a desire for me. It heard that as a fact for me. It didn't question it. It didn't say, are you sure that's really? Are you sure? Okay, well, if you want to not stop drinking, I'll make sure you're in situations and I'll make sure you're around people that will encourage you to drink. So what are you thinking about yourself? So now we've heard about the conscious mind and the subconscious, but she also talks about the superconscious mind. And this she calls the God mind. And she says, within each of us is the God mind. And this is the realm of perfect ideas. Here's a quote from Flossie. In it, meaning in the superconscious or God mind, in it is the perfect pattern spoken of by Plato, the divine design, for there is a divine design for each person. There is a place that you are to fill that no one else can fill. something you are to do which no one else can do. There is a perfect picture of this in the superconscious mind. It usually flashes across the conscious as an unattainable ideal, something too good to be true. Have you ever felt that? What if? Wouldn't it be amazing if? As we get older, we really do stop dreaming. We don't really allow ourselves to do that sort of fantasizing about this dream life. We do it maybe more when we're younger, but I encourage it strongly to imagine a future self that might even seem a bit beyond your reach. How else can we get what we want if we can't even think about it, gals? We got to be able to think about it. That's the superconscious mind. Here's what Flossie says about it. Many people are in ignorance of their true destinies and are striving for things and situations which do not belong to them and would only bring failure and dissatisfaction if attained. Usually the perfect picture flashes across the conscious as an unattainable ideal, something too good to be true. And so we don't allow ourselves to think about it. We don't allow ourselves to focus on it because we think it's too good to be true. But gals, I'm here to tell you that I agree with her. This desire that comes from the superconscious or God mind is in line with what I like to call divine desire. If you have a desire for something in your life that just keeps haunting you, my dear, it's coming straight from the God mind. It's coming from the superconscious. It is yours. And you would not desire it if you didn't have the capability of making it happen. But one of the biggest things we do at this stage of life is we push all of that aside and think, come on, not only is it too late, but I got a struggle going on here with alcohol and other problems. The last thing I'm thinking about is some divine desire. And I admit it, that comes afterwards. If you're struggling with alcohol, it's hard to imagine such things. But I want you to know that the possibility is there, and it's one of the deep rewards of sobriety. Nearing the end of this first chapter, what Flossie is essentially doing with us here is getting us on board. She wants us to understand the importance of our thoughts and our imagination in our lives, because that's how we create our lives. Here's what she says. Every desire uttered or unexpressed is a demand. We are often startled by having a wish suddenly fulfilled. And then she tells this lovely story. For example, one Easter, having seen many beautiful rose trees in the florist's window, I wished I would receive one, and for an instant saw it mentally being carried in the door. Easter came, and with it a beautiful rose tree. I thanked my friend the following day and told her it was just what I had wanted. She replied, I didn't send you a rose tree. I sent you lilies. The man had mixed up the order and sent me a rose tree simply because I had started the law in action. I had to have a rose tree. Isn't that sweet? And then she says this, hear this one. This one is really important. Write this one down. Quote, nothing stands between man and his highest ideals and every desire of his heart but doubt and fear. I'm going to say that one again. Underline those last two words. Nothing stands between man and his highest ideals and every desire of his heart but doubt and fear. My dears, those are the two big ones. Those are the ones that hold us back from sobriety, from healing, from forgiveness, from emotional growth. Fear is huge and doubt will shut us down every day of the week. Watch for those two emotions. You can't just say, I'm never going to doubt and I'm never going to fear, but try to be aware of them. And when they come, take a nice deep breath and ask yourself, could I think of this another way? Because it's absurd for me or Flossie or anyone to just say to you, just don't think that way. Just don't feel that way. And your life will change. Unfortunately, it's not that simple. But understanding this is a really great place to start. And over time, with the right guidance, the right direction, the right work on ourselves, we can make these changes and experience a change in our lives that is incredibly beautiful. Here's what Flossie says at the end of this chapter. In the following chapter, I will deal with the different methods of impressing the subconscious mind. It is your faithful servant, but you must be careful to give it the right orders. You have ever a silent listener at your side. Your subconscious mind. And she ends by saying, any man who does not know the power of the word is behind the times. I love that. That was 101 years ago. She probably wrote it before 1925. It was published in 25. She says, let me write it again. Any man who does not know the power of the word is behind the times. Well, dears, it's 100 plus years later. Are we behind the times? Get with it, right? We need to understand the power of the word. And then she gives us one last quote from the Christian Bible, Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Thanks for coming today, gals. And if you want to come deeper into Snippet Land today, just shoot me an email. Let's keep this simple. Becca@BeccaJacobson.com. All you got to do is ask me for my sober living letters. Thanks for popping in. Be sure to come back next time so I can keep your head on straight. Sending you buckets of love.